තෙරුවන් සරණයි. Has the Dhamma been able to put a smile on your face yet? Yes? Good. It's not the sight of me that should put a smile on your face. Because I'm not going to be always this good looking. Should be the Dhamma. As the Dhamma begins to make an impact and begins to make a transformation, a change within your lives, a smile will appear on your face that can never be wiped away. And that becomes an unconditional smile. That is what we are here for. We must all strive for that, ladies and gentlemen. The reason we make this journey, and we have been, and the Mahasangha throughout the world, it's not just myself or my fellow monks at the monastery, Mahasangha throughout the world, the reason we came into robes is so that we could put a smile on our own faces. Because if I don't smile, what hope and confidence would you have in what I say is going to make you smile, right? And I don't just mean about this smile. That smile I can change at any time. See? Now I'm not very happy, am I? Oh, am I? I'm talking about the smile that beams across right from the core of your heart. Right from within, that smile has to be unconditional. So no one can take it away. No one can wipe it off your face. The things that go on around you will continue to go on. Don't be in any disbelief that what we do here is going to change anything around you. They will continue to change. They will continue to have their ups and downs. They will be the good times and the bad times. None of that is going to change. People who don't like you are not all of a sudden going to begin to like you just because you are on the path to Nibbana. Sometimes you might actually have more people begin to dislike you. That's also quite possible. So you'll ask me then, Swaminathan, why do you then tell us that a good way to gauge whether you're on the right path to Nibbana is by seeing if you have become a blessing to others? You might ask. Well, it's because I don't care if people stop liking you for the right reasons. If people don't like you and that is because you are mean to them, you're evil, you're terrible, that's bad. If people don't like you because you're selfish, you only think about yourself, you're willing to get what you want by hook or by crook, and it won't matter to you whether in trying to get what you want you have to end up hurting someone else's feelings, putting someone down, talking them down, undermining their achievements so that you can shine bright and claim to be the top and at the helm of your game, but always keep undermining other people's efforts. In fact, when people speak with you, if they feel like a deflated balloon and that's why they don't like you, then there's something wrong and the Dhamma has not yet touched you, not yet healed you. But if the reason that they don't like you is because you take no interest now in some of the things that they do, such as maybe going out and partying all the time. Maybe if it's because you take no interest now in going out and eating and indulging yourself in sensuality. If that's why they don't like you, well then so be it. It's better one person going to hell than two. You know you can't please everybody, right? That's not going to change. Before you listened to the Dhamma, wasn't that so? You couldn't please everybody. There were some that liked you, and there were some that just didn't get along. Sometimes maybe in your own family, your extended family. You know, maybe you have siblings who just don't get along with you for some reason. And you wonder, we shared the same womb. We had the same mother. We drank the same milk. How is it so that I just can't get along with my sister or my brother? That's just going to be. Always going to be the case. There will always be people who you can win over, and there will be those who you just can't. But It might have been that when people liked you, people respected you, they spoke to you in a nice way, that made you happy, and then of course the opposite was also true. People could shake your happiness. They could take away, as if a thief would come in the night and take away your most prized possession. In the same way, if someone could speak to you and take away your happiness, then what have you actually gained that is yours to keep? All your prized possessions, they're only temporarily yours, aren't they? Only till the moment someone comes and snatches it from you. Parents, you have your children with you. You think they're going to be yours forever? I'm not even talking about Mara. I'm talking about the daughter-in-law. I'm talking about the son-in-law. Right? They're going to come and take your child away from you. And then when you were the king and the queen of their world, all of that is going to change. Because someone else is going to become very special in their lives. And then if that, on that day, the smile that you always wore across your face is going to go away, and you feel like you're left alone, like a lonely old parent. No one loves me anymore. No one cares about me anymore. My son doesn't ring me anymore. Mothers? Am I hitting a vein here? My son doesn't talk to me anymore. My daughter, she used to be the apple of my eye. And then she took off. She went to a faraway land. She said she'd always give me a call. Every other day she promised me she would ring me. She said she would Skype me. But those calls stopped happening some years ago. And then I don't know what's going on with her. She seems to have found new friends. And I no longer have value in her life. Whenever you seek value in other things, in other people, what that tells you, that what that must remind you, is that you haven't found value within. See, when you wear a diamond, you look beautiful. Can you say the same about the diamond? I'll ask you the question again. When you wear a diamond, say a diamond ring, or a diamond-crusted necklace, or maybe even a tiara, or a crown that has a diamond on it, one would look at you and say, wow, you're really looking the piece today. You're really looking the part. Because what they're saying is the diamond is adding luster to you. They say, you look fantastic. You look $1 million. Thanks to the diamond. Would they say the same about the diamond? Does the diamond look prettier? Does it look more beautiful? Because it is you who's wearing it. Not quite so. Because the diamond on its own is fabulous. So I want you to become a diamond. So that you don't need someone to wear you as a necklace. You don't need someone to wear you as a crown. You don't need someone to show you off like a wedding ring for you to have any value. You are the diamond. And it's pressure that builds a diamond, it creates a diamond. Withstanding pressures. You know, a diamond takes a long time to become one, right? Because if the pressure doesn't kill you, then out of that process you will get a diamond. So what we are learning here is how, when the pressures of life come our way, we are able to face them. We are able to withstand those pressures. Use our wisdom to withstand those pressures so that at the end of this we all become diamonds. That is the dhatu. So you are supposed to do that. Become a diamond. So I want you all to be able to wear a smile on your faces, and even if not on your faces, in your hearts, a smile that cannot be taken away. You know, from time to time, just take account of what things in your life still perturb you, still bother you, still annoy you. Have a mental note of that when you come to the Sunday sermons. You don't need to come and share all that with me at the end of the talk, but you need to know what they are. When you go to the doctor, do you know, you don't just go to the doctor and say, "Doctor, something's wrong with me." The doctor asks, "What's wrong with you?" "I don't know, something's wrong with me." You don't say that. You have something to complain about. That you say, "It's aching here, my shoulder's aching, my neck is aching, my leg is aching, my stomach is aching, I have a fever." Right? You have some symptoms to complain about. In the same way, when you come to see your doctor on a Sunday morning, whoever that doctor might be, so don't book that particular doctor. It'll just be a doctor. There'll be a consultant doctor. So when the doctor's there, he's in the room, he or she is in the room, you walk in, make sure you know what your problem is. All diseases are broadly of three categories. They are raga, desha, and moha. You need to know what your diseases are, just as I do what mine are. And then the Dhamma helps us. The Dhamma heals us. And once that happens, you become a happy person, an unconditionally happy person. That's our quest, and that's our purpose. We are assured that it is possible to achieve that because of two things. One, there are those who walk this path before us. There are those who've been there and done that, and they have shown us that it is possible. You know, human beings just like you and I, we're not even talking about devas and brahmas, let them alone. We're talking about human beings, people who've done this before you and I, men and women, adults and children. There's no one in this room who can put their hand up and say, "Swami Nuhansa, someone like me has never attained the fruits of the sasana. So what confidence can I have that it is going to be possible for me?" There's no one in this room who can say that. Kings have done so. Peasants have done so. Rich men have done so. And poor men have done so. People of very high caste, they've done so. And people of the lowest caste have done so. The very well educated and the uneducated, they have both done so. Men have done so and women have done so. Adults and children, the same. So, your case is not unique. You are not in a predicament that has never been come out of. All of us are on a journey someone else has been on before us. Does that not exude confidence in you? That if the great fathers have walked this path before us, then it is entirely possible that we can also walk the same path, walk in their footsteps, and achieve the same results. You need to have that confidence in you, ladies and gentlemen. You need to. Because that confidence will keep you moving you forward. As you begin to understand the Dhamma, you will become less reliant on that. That's how it's going to work. You know the stories of the great arahants, when you get a time, moment, read them. Find the books, read them. Not much of it has been written in English, I admit, but there are still a few good books out there. But there's plenty written in the Sinhalese language, which makes you and I very fortunate that we have access to that information still. The stories of the great arahants may be written in some oriental languages, but not many in some of the western languages. Not yet anyway, but our plan is to change that so that people in the western part of the world, people who are natively German, people who are Italian, people who are Spanish, they can also read about the great arahants. So that they can have an idol, not to worship, to become worthy of worship by following in those footsteps and becoming one of them. I often ask, why do you watch YouTube when you can get yourself on YouTube? Isn't it? If you can get yourself on YouTube, then why watch YouTube? Become someone who has something to say. Not someone who has to say something. There's a difference. Many people in this world, they have to say something. Don't you know people like that? These are the people you invite to a party. So it never gets boring. They always have something to say. But then there are others who are few and far between. Now they have to say something. The people who you invite to the party, they have to say something. Something or the other they have to say. They just can't keep their mouth shut. But then there are others who have something to say. And that thing can be life-changing. That thing be very interesting. It can be life-transforming. We all used to have to say something. But as the Dhamma has begun to change myself, and I'm sure it has begun to change you, which may be why some people don't like you anymore, because you're not always jabbering on. Maybe you're no longer that talkative like you used to be. There might have been times where if you started, no one else had any chance of getting a word out. And they might have gone, oh, there she goes. Right, that's it. We might as well just get up and leave. It's not like we are going to get a chance to talk anyway. But now, it may be that you have little to say. But when you speak, you're worth listening to. The words that you utter have a lot more depth. No longer can the words that you say be counted. They have to be weighed. Because they are very deep, very profound. They have a big impact. Words must not be counted. They have to be weighed. But people who just keep on talking, you can count those words, right? Yeah, there's another 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000. Shut up. So I want that smile in your hearts. If we started this year off with the Dhamma, some of you even visited us at the monastery as we launched ourselves into the new year. So we started this year with great ambition. So where are we now? March? Mid-March? Yes. So we are a quarter into the year now. 3/4 left. This year should be a year where you achieve something. Don't think about Margapala. Because how do you know? You can never know for sure. It's very difficult to gauge that. That's why I give you a better metric. Ask yourself, remember I said, have those things in the back of your mind, the things that bother you, the people that annoy you. Do they still do that? They will still do it. But does it still happen to you? Does the annoyance still happen to you? Does getting angry still happen to you? Does feeling disappointed still happen to you? Does being bothered still happen to you? These are the questions you need to keep asking yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Never, and I'll say that again, never let the Dhamma be a purely academic research or study, because that's pointless. The Dhamma is not here as another subject for us to study. Like we studied history and physics, or those are pretty practical subjects. I'd say social studies or whatever, right? Economics, whatever. Many years of our lives we mastered these subjects so that we knew the content. But how much of what you learned at university do you actually apply in your lives today? I often ask myself that question. But me as a monk, fair enough. But even in your lay lives, how much of actually what you actually studied at school, at uni, do you actually apply in your lives today? I'm not saying that education was useless, because if you hadn't had that, you would not have acquired the skills and the knowledge that you have today to be able to function and do your jobs. That's another matter. But I don't want the Dhamma to be the same for you. The Dhamma has to be something very practical. It must be able to solve the problems, the riddles of your life. The sufferings, it must be able to take them away. The unhappy moments, it must be able to take them away. A big test is coming up. Who here in this room can say that you will never have to face grief, bereavement, Yeah, that's coming around the corner for some of you. Just think about the next person in your family to pass away. Your loved one. So once you think that it's going to be that person, think again. Right? Because that's not cast in stone. You never know when and whose time it's going to be next. Right? But even if you remained and the biological clock ticks off for the next person in queue at home, in your family, you know it's going to have an impact on you. If before the Dhamma is going to be the same as after the Dhamma, then the Dhamma has not been a practical application in your lives. So these moments will come to you, and in these moments you will have to test yourself. There are those who are in this room today who have walked up to me and said, Swaminhansa, I used to be very attached to my husband. I used to be very attached to my children. I used to be very attached to my mother, my father. And then somehow I was fortunate enough to listen to the Dhamma. Another person they point out in the room, that gentleman over there, he brought me here. That lady over there, she brought me here. She sent me the first link and I clicked on that and I thought, wow, I want to go and listen to that stuff. So then I came along. And then I've been coming along. And guess what, Swaminhansa? 2 weeks ago, my father passed away. And just as you said, the Dhamma saved me. Because in those moments, I had something to hold on to. I had refuge. I felt like I was not lost. Because when my mother passed away just a year ago, I was in the same boat. But I had no paddle to row the boat. But this time round, I had one. So therefore, I didn't get lost. I knew what was going on. I was able to apply the Dhamma that you taught me. The Dhamma that I got from the Mahasangha, the Buddha's word, the Buddha's prescription is this for all mental ailments. And I was able to apply myself. Apply the Dhamma to myself and I was able to work out, this is matter. And there's a mind. Where is the father that passed away? I was able to ask myself that question. And once I reflected on that, I recognized that this is merely a happening. It's a happening. It's an event. It's a going on. I need not internalize it. I need not personify what's going on. And once I started contemplating along those lines, I personally felt the grief washed away. People come up here and they utter paeans of joy. You heard of the Udana Vakya, the great Arahants uttered back then. Yeah? Today we are hearing them from the lay community. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Amazing. Incredible. Some have given up old habits. Habits that they had for many, many, many long years. I've been meaning to... I wanted to wait until we had done 3 whole months of this, but now I think I want to say it out loud and share it with the rest of you. There's a gentleman in the audience who had a habit of smoking. He's been smoking for a while now. But one day, he listened to the Buddha's teaching. And then he asked himself, why do I do this? What is the point? If all there is are just fleeting moments that arise and pass away, the mere experience of smoking a cigarette, does that give me anything lasting? If it's just a rupa, a vedana, a sanya, sankhara and a vijnana that arise and pass away, then what is the point in being attached to all that? If all things that you attach to ultimately bring you only suffering, then what is the point of clinging on to that? So that was the first thought they had and they decided, right, you know what, I'm going to give it up. I'm going to test myself, whether the Dhamma can actually heal me. And so they did that. But they didn't stop there. You know what they did next? This is what the gentleman did next. He thought, right, from here on, now this money that I have been spending on smoking, This money that I just burnt away. I earned this money because my teachers taught me something. My parents gave me a good upbringing. They gave me a good education. And it is all that has helped me to earn this money. Why don't I invest this in something that can actually bring me something great in the future and can make an impact in other people's lives? So this gentleman decided that from this day forward, the money that I used to spend on smoking, just burning away at the end of a fag, I'm going to make an offering of this to the ministry of the Sasana. And from there on, every week he walks up to me and says, "Swami Nansa, let's smoke it away in the service of the Buddha Sasana." I don't know how much he puts in there. Maybe it's 5 rupees. That's not what matters. It's not the amount that matters. It's the thought that counts, ladies and gentlemen. If it is the amount that mattered, Anathapindika, he should have been the one who got the golden palace. It was not. He was the one who was a bystander, who observed this fantastic offering, brought his hands together and said, "Oh, sadhu, 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 what a wonderful, what a magnificent offering to the Buddha Sasananda." And that man ended up with a golden palace in heaven, and Anathapindika, who spent many hundreds of thousands of then money, he ended up with a silver palace. Now don't ask me how do you build a golden palace in heaven. I don't know the physics behind that. But that is besides the matter. The point being, it is not the quantity, it is the intention that always makes a difference. So I was waiting for the day, I was waiting for 3 months to pass and then share this with you. But hey, why not? Now I have confidence that it will continue. These are success stories from amongst you. You know, you always only see me. Swami Nansa, he was a lay person, he's changed. When can we do this? But you know, there are the small victories and many of them dotted around in the audience. Many, many, many small victories. Add them all up. Put them all together. You've heard that before. Put them all together and they're just as good as my story. So don't you all wait to hear my story. Put all your stories together. That's as good as mine. So you come up to me and you share your stories. Unfortunately, not everyone in the room gets to listen to all that. I do. So I rejoice in them. Well, heck, you know, I deserve something for all the effort that I make, right? Those stories are incredible. Remarkable. When you share those stories with me, I keep an ear out to see what the Dhamma has done for you, how the Dhamma has transformed you. There are many here, ladies and gentlemen, would you believe me, who used to be a menace at home. People preferred, the rest of their family preferred not having them at home. Now, your family typically want you at home, right? When father comes home, children go, "Daddy's home." There are some in the audience. When father used to get home, children used to go, "Hi, your daddy's home." And that was only after the mother. The mother used to say that first. "Children, daddy's home, go sleep." There are such stories amongst you. Do you remember there was a gentleman, a foreign gentleman, who used to come along to the sermons. He visited, I think he came for about 2 or 3 talks. And it was here we had the last session that he could join, and then he had to go off to Bulgaria. So he was here on a study. He wanted to explore what Buddhism was. Can you imagine the amount of merits this man must have had? He wanted to understand what Buddhism was and he came here. Of all the places he could have gone to. You know, fate didn't take him to wherever else. It brought him here. If you were here that day, you would have seen the tears of joy in his face. Here's a man who wasn't born to a Buddhist family. He had no Buddhist descent, no parents in his family, no one in his family was ever a Buddhist. So who is Buddhism for? Is it for Buddhists? Oh no, 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 no. He came for 3 sermons, that's it. And on the 3rd day, he comes to me and says, "Swami Nansar, I've not been very proud of the life that I have lived. Let me tell you the truth," he said, "and I want to share a story with you." I don't know whether he'll be listening to this sermon, and I trust that he will be happy with me to share this story with you. Some of you were there when he was sharing this story with me. A very personal and touching story. And he said, "Swami Nansar, when I left home, my home in Bulgaria, to go and seek something more meaningful, I promised my wife," he said, "I promised my wife I'll become a better man." He's very successful in his career, an investment banker. Very successful in his career. He's an author, very educated individual, very successful. But at home, different story. So his wife and his children had wanted him to change for the better. He'd been looking for answers, but he didn't find any. Ultimately, he came across the Buddha's asana. And then that day he got on his knees and said, "Swami, I never thought I'd see a grown man cry like that." I said, "Swami, answer. I found it. I found what I was looking for. In noble association, I found the answer. Remember, it's not just me that made that change. Because when he came here, he listened to me, but who did he get to spend time with? I only talked to him when, you know, in the sermons. The first day he was sat there at the corner, he didn't even come up to me and talk to me. The second day he came and he half bent and talked to me. And the 3rd or the 4th day, the last day, was when he got on his knees. That's what happens to all of us. But this is not about people who have knee problems. Some of you come up to me and say, "Swami Nansa, I'm really sorry, Swami Nansa, my knees are not working, Swami Nansa. I don't mean to insult, Swami Nansa." Well, I tell you, you need not. I mean, you know, if you like, give me a salute and walk away, it's fine. I don't expect from you a thank you or a gratitude or anything of that sort, because I'm not here expecting anything. I'm only here to give you something. That's all. You can't make me happy by worshipping me. Parents are happy when their children worship them, right? Sometimes you even share those stories with other parents. When you wait to pick up your children from school, yeah, mother's club. Does your son worship you before he goes to school? Mine does. It makes you happy. Well, you know, innocent, happy, you know, it's fine. Take it while you still can, because a girl's going to come and take that from you. So this gentleman said, "You know, Swami Nansa, my wife wanted me to change and I didn't know how to. But now I've come across the teaching. I have realized in the Dhamma there is happiness and I have discovered it." So he went back to Bulgaria. And you know what he did next? He promised me, the last day, a few days before he left, I met him at the monastery. And I asked him to promise me that he will take the Dhamma to the Bulgarian people. That's all I ask anyone. Anyone comes and asks me, "What do you want, Swami Nansa?" "Take the Dhamma to your people. Take the Dhamma to your family. Take the Dhamma to your friends, to your colleagues, to your fellow countrymen. Take the Dhamma. Because the Dhamma is my refuge. If that is my refuge, then what should be yours?" The Dhamma, right? That is all I ask. That is all my teacher asks of me. So that is all I can ask of anyone else. So here's what he did. He went back to Bulgaria and then he wrote a whole book on his journey, his expedition to find the truth, to find unconditional happiness. He's promised to send a copy to the monastery, and when I have it, I will show it to you. What change and impact and influence noble association has had on one individual. See, money doesn't bring happiness, does it? If it does, why did he get on his knees the other day? I hadn't given him a penny. If anything, it cost him his hard-earned money to come here, to come down to Sri Lanka, to come to the monastery, to come to the to Rajagiri, to listen to the sermons. It only cost him money to get here. He never earned any money out of it. Tell me if you can then that money brings happiness. It doesn't. If you believe money brings happiness, then money will soon enough bring you unhappiness. Anything in this world, if you believe that it brings you happiness, it will soon enough prove to you otherwise. If you think that your children bring you happiness, in only a matter of time, they will prove to you otherwise. Don't you agree? If you believe it is your husband who brings you happiness, soon enough, he will prove to you otherwise. He will prove to you not so. Why do you learn these lessons by attaching yourself to things? When I can teach you this lesson. When the Mahasangha can teach you this lesson. See, the Dhamma never forsakes you. Everything else does, but the Dhamma never forsakes you. The Dhamma that you learned 7 months ago, has it left you? Has it? No. But maybe a friend that you had 7 months ago, your best friend, maybe today they're no longer among the living. Elderly members of the audience, I speak to you, soon enough, your best friends, your colleagues, your co-workers, your classmates, they're soon enough going to say, ta-ta. So if you think they bring you happiness, soon enough, they will prove to you otherwise. But the Dhamma that you take, the Dhamma that you imbibe, the Dhamma that you allow to instill within yourself, that will be yours to keep forever and ever and ever. If you become a Sotapanna in this birth, it will be with you until the end of samsara. These are the only fruits that remain with you for eternity. Everything else, very temporary. Understand the reality of this, and you are a free man. Don't, you're a slave. So let's understand the Dhamma, our only refuge. That is why we come up here and give you the Dhamma, because that is the only refuge, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing else can save you. Nothing else can save you. Your children can't save you. You know that. You know your children can't save you. You weren't able to save your children. How can they save you? Some of you might have a children who has a cancer. Show me how you're going to save them. Show me. Your child has a cancer. Show me how you're going to save them. Every day she wakes up crying. Every day she goes to bed crying. Oh, Mama, I can't leave you. Please save me, do something. You've now already taken them around the world, trying to give them the best treatments that you can afford, that money can buy, but you still haven't been able to save them. And I don't mean death. I mean the fear of death. You know, dying is one. But the fear of death is always with you while you're alive, right? What's the freaking point? Think about it. I mean, the fear of death must only come to you a moment before death. Huh? Just think about it. What kind of losers we are. You're either dying or you're in fear of death. You're always in one of these two states. When you cross the street, are you not in fear of death? Just walking on the streets, you're in fear of death. Remember when we had the war? Some 30, 40 years ago? When was that? 15 or so years ago? A war that lasted 30 years? Mothers, they were always in fear. People were either dying or what? They were in fear of death. What's the point? You're either dead or you're in fear of death. What's the point? When do you live? Ladies, gentlemen, when do you live? What does living mean to you? Is living merely being afraid of dying? Is that what living is? Is that what living is? The fear of death, that is what living is. You might as well die. What's the point of living? If you can't live a happy life, what's the point of living? Why do you have your walls built up so high at home? How high are those walls? 3, 4, 5, 6 feet? And then you have barbed wire around it as well, right? And then CCTV cameras all the way. And the little shards of glass on the top. Yeah? Why? Fear of theft. Fear of burglars. Fear of the rapists. There you go. You're either being raped or you're in fear of being raped. You're either being burgled or in fear of being burgled. Tell me, what's the point of living like that? Honestly, how much money can help you out of that? Huh? What course do they do at which university that helps you be free from that? Come on, give me answers. I'm asking you questions. Either I have mastered the art of life or you have. Right? I'm willing to accept that you have if you can answer my questions. But you should prove to me that you are living a happy life. I ask you, what is a happy life? From where I'm sitting, it looks like a happy life is a life where you're always dreading the worst. Happy, you call it, eh? Happy cow. How can that be happiness? You either have something or you're in fear of losing it. No, actually, no, they're the same. You either want something or you are in fear of losing it. Aren't these the two states that you're always in regard to something that you want? If you find yourself attached to something, you're either wanting it in a state of wanting, which is also very unsatisfactory, or you're in a state of fear of losing it. Tanhai jayati soko. Meaning, a state when you don't have it. Tanhai jayati bhayam. In a state where you have it, but you're in fear of losing it. When do you actually get to enjoy it? Nine long months, you kept your child in your womb. Yeah? For 9 long months, you endured the pain, mothers. And you brought your child into this world finally. Maybe once, maybe twice, maybe 3 times, maybe 4 times. You've been through this now. What did you want from your children? To be? Why did you bring your child into this world? Out of sheer compassion for them, or? Well, then let me have them. If it is pure compassion you have for them, then let me have them. Let the Buddhasasana have them. Because you know you can't give more compassion than the Buddha can. Are you going to suggest that you have more compassion than the Buddha does? Certainly not. Right? There's no more compassion than the Sasana can offer. That is where you have infinite compassion. Incomparable compassion. Right? So the reason you brought your children into this world was because you expected a certain level of happiness from them. You wanted to enjoy being a mother. Mothers, no? Did you not want to enjoy being a mother? Did you not want to enjoy being a father? Fathers? Yes. So I ask you, when are you going to start doing that? How old is your child now? 10, 20, 30, 40? When are you as a parent going to start enjoying being a mother? Because I'm here to prove to you that you're not enjoying still. You haven't started enjoying yet. And here's why. For all those years you wanted to have a child, you were always longing for a child. It's like Christmas Eve. And everyone hates Christmas Eve. Why? Because you can see the presents. You just can't open them. Yeah, so you look forward to Christmas Day. So likewise, you were waiting for the day that you became a mother. And then the day eventually came. From the day you became a mother, now, how have you been living? The child's in the cot. Every 10 minutes you walk up to the child and check. Is she still okay? And nowadays you have those little microphones and cameras pointing at the child, right? So you can check the baby monitors, they're called, aren't they? Baby monitors. Why do you have to monitor the baby? Why? Don't tell me it's because something bad can happen to the baby. No. Then you have to have a baby monitor next door as well. If you're telling me, Swaminatha, the baby monitor is to make sure that the child is okay, no, I disagree with that. Then there are lots of children in this world, so why don't you go and install baby monitors in every child's room? No, that's not why. Here's why. You are in fear. That's why. You are only in fear of your own child. That's why you have the baby monitor with your child, constantly monitoring your child so that you can take a breath of relief. Maybe you have a smartphone app that sends you an alert when the child makes a movement. You're in a meeting. Maybe you're in the sermon. The Buddha is here to preach to you. And in the next 2 minutes, you're going to attend Sotapanna, the state of Sotapanna. But the phone goes, tick, tick, movement detected. What is more important now, your Sotapannanas or making sure that your child is okay? You know the answer. Out comes the phone. Let the Buddha carry on. He can speak. I can listen to him later. I'll find listen to his sermon on YouTube. But my child, I have to look at him now. I have to make sure my child is okay. So I ask the mothers in this room, mothers, come on, speak to me. Answer my question. When are you going to start enjoying being a mother? Why did you become one? Because there weren't enough children in this world? Were there not enough children in this world? The population keeps rising and it's become a big problem. Yeah? So there were enough and more children in this world without you bringing your own child into this world. So it was not merely out of good grace. It was not out of sheer compassion for the human race that you brought your child into this world. And certainly not for the child's benefit. It's because you wanted to enjoy being a mother. Okay, it's fine. Well, my ask is, well, have you started doing that yet? Would you buy a car, save up so much money, let's say for 3, 4, 5 long years, you save up to buy a car, you bring it home and park it in the garage and not drive it for the rest of your life? Would you? Would you? Anyone? No, because if you bought a car, what do you want to do next? You want to drive the damn thing, right? And enjoy going out for a ride and enjoy it. Enjoy the cool breeze. Enjoy the smell of the new leather. You want to enjoy your car. You want to enjoy your car. Okay, so you bring a child into this world. What do you want to do now? Enjoy. Have you? Okay, now your children are 25, 30 years old. They're grown-ups, they're adults. They're settled down. Mothers, are you happy now? They're 25, 30 years old, settled, married. Are you happy now? I can make you start sweating. I can make you sweat just by passing on a false information about your child. If there are mothers in here who has a daughter, 30 years old, settled down, she's also on her way to becoming a mother, right? She's with child. All I have to do is spread the news amongst you that the water these days, right, is polluted. The air is polluted. If you're pregnant, don't drink that water. The air, don't breathe that water because it can cause a miscarriage. You're a mother here. You know your child, your daughter is with child. She's pregnant. The next question you have is, Swaminasa, from when? Then I tell you, it's been like that for the last 6 months. Uh-oh. Can you be happy anymore? What did that news do to you? It took away your happiness. Honestly, tell me, folks, you know, what is the meaning of this life that you live? If you're always left longing for something or dreading something would happen to it, when do you actually enjoy life? You know, you're in the Sugati world, right? The Sugati world. We are in the Sugati world. This is called the blissful plane. Because in the four great hells, it's terrible. That's called the woeful plane. Have you not been so successful at transforming the blissful plane into a woeful one? Shabash. Look at what ignorance and attachment have done to you. Look at what ignorance and attachment have done to you. They have made life a living hell. It's as if after all those years of living in hell, we got so used to it. We got so accustomed to it. You know, there's a story about this woman who used to live in a... She got married, right? And then her husband always used to beat her. Some of you may have heard this story. My dad used to tell me this. So this husband always used to beat her. She used to complain, but, you know, she could do nothing about it. But the husband always used to beat her. And then one fine day, the husband passed away. So when the husband was alive, people used to hear crying and screaming from the house. And people knew. What did people know? The husband was beating her up. So people used to know that. That passers-by, they'd know, but they wouldn't go to get involved. Right? The husband was the thug, so they wouldn't get involved. The husband passed away. So what do now the people expect? Villagers, neighbors, what do they expect? At least now, this woman can be happy. Right? She can live without being beaten up. So the husband passes away, and then one day, someone walks past. And you still hear the screams. You still hear the cries. So someone curious, they walk up and to find out what's going on. Because you would be curious. Why so? Husband's passed away. Right? The bane of her life has now come to an end. So how come she's still crying? So what now she does? What she does now is she takes a bat and she hits herself. Why? Tell me why. You know why. You're doing the same thing, that's why. Why? She's so used to it. She's become so accustomed to it, she can't live without it. So she hits herself with this bat and she cries all day and screams because she has become so used to it. Now, in the same way. Okay, dot, 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 fill in the lines. You've spent far too much time in the four great hells. We've become so used to it, so used to suffering, so used to grievance, so used to fear and dread, that now that we have come into the Sugati world, just by sheer good fortune and good merits, we miss the good old times. So what do you do? So what do? You continue to live in fear and grief and sorrow and suffering, and you torment yourselves using the bat that is attachment. You keep on winging and swinging it and banging yourself with it, hitting yourself with it, torturing yourself with it. This is self-torture, ladies and gentlemen. Why, oh why, do you do it yourselves? Self-torture. Why do you do it yourselves? You tell me, I bring my children into this world because I want to be happy. When were you happy? Give me one day you were happy. When they go off to school, are you happy now? Are you? No, because you are dreading what might happen to them at school. That's why when they come back home, you have to go check their bags. Don't you? From time to time, don't you go dip into their bags and check what else they might have in there besides the books? Because you know there are drugs going around. What if my child has done, started doing drugs? Don't you go into their bedrooms when they're not at home and just go check things just to make sure? You check under the pillows, you check under the duvet, you check under the blankets, you check under the mattress. Don't you wish you knew your child's computer password? Only they don't share it with you. If you had a day to sit down at your child's computer, parents say, if you love your children, wouldn't you go and check through each of the folders, especially ticking those hidden items? And then if there are folders you can't open because they're encrypted. And then I found a way to crack that. Wouldn't you want to unencrypt those files and find out what's in there? Wouldn't you? Why? What do you live in? Say it out loud. Fear. Is that why you brought the child into this world? To live in fear? But what ultimately have you been gifted with? Fear. That's why last week I asked you the question, is this a blessing or a curse? What's worse than a curse is a curse in disguise when it comes in the shape of a blessing. Because then you fall for it. I'm bringing only one example here because this is an example that is close to many of your hearts. And I can talk to you about something else. But if I can convince the mothers and fathers in the room here that if the children are like that, then so are everything else will already occur to you. Because this is part of your life. They are the apple of your eye. I understand that. I know that. I have a mother. I know how she doted on me. I have a father. My father was more attached to me than my mother. So I know what it's like. I know the battles that they had to go through internally. Luckily, no, they didn't put it on me. When I said it was time for me to go away, they were very mature in the way they handled that situation. All they wanted to make sure that I was happy with my choice, that I knew what I was doing. That's all. So this day, I have great respect for the way in which they handled that situation. I mean, they knew. They had many hopes on me. Many, many hopes on me. And they hoped that I'd look after my younger brother. But today, he's looking after my parents as well. But I'm looking after my whole family in a very different way. Just as I'm looking after this family in a very different way. I love you all the same. No difference now. But today, I have been able to become someone who will not grieve at the loss of their parents. I want that day to come for my parents also. So that when their child passes away, when their children pass away, they'll be okay with that. That won't take away their happiness. But I know there'll be many in this room who are not yet there. That's why I keep asking you, have you brought yourselves a blessing or was it a curse that came in disguise? It is not the child that brings you suffering, ladies and gentlemen. It's not. It's your attachment that brings you suffering. They are very different things. Unrelated. Entirely unrelated. But because of Sakkaya Ditti. Because of Sakkaya Ditti, you can't give up your attachment to your child. Because you think it is your child you're attached to. It's not. Let the truth be told, you cannot attach to any external thing. You cannot. Now that might sound like a riddle. What do you mean, Swami? So what do you mean we can't attach to any external thing? The reason you can't attach to any external thing is you have never experienced an external object. Huh? That makes no sense. Well, it does. You've never seen anything in this room. You have never. In fact, you've never even seen your hand. You've never seen yourself. But what is it you see then? You see an image of all these objects. You don't see the object itself. You see the image. An image is created in your mind. That is what you see. There's no such thing called color in this world. Color does not exist in the outside world. Although you see all these vivid colors. The flowers, colors, right? All this, the room is colored. You think it's not. None of these things have color. But if I asked you, which flower do you like better? You might tell me, I like the red flower better. And thinking that, you know what? You want to walk away with the red flower. So you attach yourself to that flower because you think the redness is in the flower. You like red. Where does red happen? In the mind. But you think it's in the flower. So you pick up the flower and you take it home with you. So now if someone steals that flower, if someone takes that flower from you, now you cry. Because you want the red. But the red happens in your mind. But you think it's in the flower. See? For you to start thinking in this way, you have to first come out of Sakkaya Ditti. You need not understand what Sakkaya Ditti is per se. As I said, it is not an academic study. But you need to understand that it has taken over your lives. All we have to do, ladies and gentlemen, is just understand the Dhamma. Understanding the Dhamma will help you solve your problems. Just come here and listen to the Dhamma. Go to the monastery, listen to the Dhamma. Go online, listen to the Dhamma. Let the Dhamma do what it does. You know, you don't need to listen to the Dhamma and then do something else as well. No. Because the Dhamma is potent enough to do what it has to do. Let the Dhamma do what it has to do. You just have to listen to the Dhamma. The Dhamma can't listen to itself, can it? No. In the same way, like after you've eaten, is there anything else you need to do? Physically, you consciously have to do to get the nutrients out of it? No, right? Because the food, along with the digestion system, it does all of that. You don't have to consciously do anything. There's a system for that. In the same way, you have to just consciously take the Dhamma in through your eyes and through your ears. Once it's come in, it will do what it's supposed to do. So you need not ask me the question, Swami Nasa, what if I forget the Dhamma? Will I understand the Dhamma? Will the Dhamma actually do what it's supposed to do? Fear not. That's the Jamma's job. Let the Dhamma do what it's supposed to do. But you have to take the Dhamma in. That the Dhamma can't do on your behalf. So once again, I come back to the question. You are attached to things. Everything you're attached to, every single thing you're attached to, you are either left longing for it, yearning it, or you are in fear of losing it. When do you actually enjoy it? When? When do you have the time to enjoy it? There is not a moment's respite. Not a moment. When you're driving your car along the streets, right? On the main street, you're driving your car along the streets of Colombo. Now, remember there are only individual chittas, right? We've talked about this. There are only individual chittas and each chitta can only take one object. Yeah? Each chitta can only take one object. So when there are individual chittas, let's just say, I'm talking about two separate chittas. This chitta sees your car. You're in the car now. You're holding the steering wheel. You're looking at your car and you're thinking to yourself, my car. Right? My car. No, not my petrol. You look at your car and you have this feeling, oh good, I have a car. Right? You have this good feeling of being a car owner. You think, yeah, it's a nice car, I like this car, good car, right? I'm a car owner and I'm fortunate to be one, I'm lucky to be one. Right? You're really enjoying that. But the next moment, you hear the horn, someone's horning. Or you have your three-wheel driver or a bus driver. They drive so close to your car. In that moment, are you thinking the same thing that you were thinking in the previous chitta? How wonderful to be a car owner. Is that what you're thinking? Is that what you're thinking? No. See, that only lasted one split second. Only when you were looking at the car and ignoring the traffic around you. But the moment you focus on the traffic around you, now what are you thinking? How do I get through this traffic unscathed? In that moment, you can't enjoy being a car owner, can you? I really want all of you to think about this, ladies and gentlemen. I'm helping you find the answers to your problems in life. This is why you suffer. You suffer because you don't understand this. Understand this and you're fine. You're done. That's it. Job's done. Drive your car happily. You can't drive happily. Because in driving school, they don't teach you how to drive. What? Happily. What do they teach you? How to drive. They teach you how to drive legally. They don't teach you how to drive happily. For that, you have to come to Sunday school. Here we teach you how to drive happily. See, in the moment you are a car driver, you're looking at the car. Let's just say the car's in the car park, right, in the garage. You walk up to your car and you look at the car and go, nice. I like this. So just imagine your car for a second. And just think the first day you had the car, because now, you know, it's past the honeymoon period, just like the wife, right, after a while, just becomes baggage. Yeah? But initially, the first day you brought home that car, didn't you feel like a proud car owner? Like you feel like a proud husband on day one? There were proud husbands and proud wives. Yeah. I've been there, done that, so I know I have the authority to speak out loud. I know. Right? My wife would have done the same. Right? So you have the car, you walk up to the car, it's there. It's the time to get into the car. And with these cars, you know, it's a full option. You don't have to even open it. As you walk up to it, the car door opens. It's like you and the car, you know, there's something between the two of you. This is what you want from your car. This is what you want from everything. This is what you want from your wife. This is what you want from your children. That you want to make it feel special. Let me say it again. You want it to make you feel special. That's why when your wife doesn't make you feel special, you lose value. That's why when your girlfriend doesn't make you feel special, you lose value. Now, one of these days I'll talk to you and explain to you in detail why is this making you feel special so important. Your whole world will collapse around you, ladies and gentlemen. It comes with a warning, okay? These sermons. This fantasy world that you have built around you, it will come crashing down. And you will be left bare and naked. So it comes with a warning. Right? If you fear that, oh no, Swami Nanda, let me live in this fantasy world of mine. Don't break it for me. Don't pop my bubble. Right? If you fear that, then maybe you shouldn't listen to these sermons. Because I am here to tell you the truth. But you don't have to take any of this at face value. Analyze it. Reflect upon it. Apply it into your life's problems. This is practical Dhamma. Apply it into your life and see whether it makes sense. If it is, accept it. If it doesn't, then don't. Kalamasutta. These are the Buddha's instructions on how to gauge how much of a sermon you have to accept and how much of it you must put away and keep it aside. So you walk up to the car. Now you want the car to make you feel special. In fact, would it not be nice if anyone else got into the car wouldn't drive? You remember Knight Rider? Yeah? Michael Knight and Kit. Yeah? When you watched that TV series, didn't you all want to have a Knight Rider? Huh? Or was it just me? What was so special about Knight Rider? Besides the, you know, the fact that it could fly, it could, you know, do all sorts of amazing things that a normal car couldn't. What was so special about it? There was a personal touch, wasn't there? So Kit was almost like it shared a soul with Michael Knight. It wouldn't respond to anyone else. Yeah? So it was special. So the car made the driver feel special. That's when you attach to anything. That's why you attach. You know, the moment you say that this is mine, this makes you feel special. It's mine. It's not yours anymore. It's mine. There is so much depth in these words, ladies and gentlemen, and I want you to try and absorb that. This teaching will free you. Honestly, it will. Otherwise, I wouldn't be saying it. There is so much depth in these words. I don't have the words to convey that depth. Words fail me. Every day, words fail me. Having to preach to you in English is hard enough. But my words fail me. I know that. But I keep trying, and you keep trying. Why was Kit so special? Because it had a personal touch. Wouldn't all of you like your cars to be that way? So even when your wife got in, the car wouldn't work. It wouldn't drive. Your friend tries to get in, no, doesn't drive. Then what would you like? Thor with his hammer? For the youngsters in the audience now, first we come up with Michael Knight and Knight Rider for people of my generation and before, and then we have to bring the Avengers. I have to cater to all audiences, right? So those who don't know Michael Knight and his car, think about Thor and his hammer. Right? There's no one who can lift that hammer besides him. Because there's a personal connection there. Doesn't that make you feel special? See, now you're driving, you walk up to your car, you're looking at the car. This chitta, you're looking at the car. You're not driving it, okay? You're still looking at the car. You're looking at the car and you're thinking to yourself, wow, that is my car. Whose car is that? That's my car. Don't you feel special? Of course you do feel special. That's why you bought it. That's why it's not good enough just to rent a car. Is it not a different feeling? Come on. I mean, a rented car would do the same as your own car, right? Does it drive differently? Does it need like some kind of different fuel or something? No, it does the same thing. But do you have that prestige and honor as you would when you own a car? No, right? No, that's why no one wants to be a car renter. People want to be a car owner. Remember, that was one of your dreams when you were younger. Ask the children in the audience. I remember when I was growing up as a child, as my father used to drive me along the streets of Colombo, I used to look around. And I used to look at the Land Cruisers. I said, one day. And so I kept telling him, one day, I would drive that ship. I didn't want to rent a car. Who wants to rent a car? It's not the same. It's not the same thing. It doesn't give you the same feeling. You have to own a car. There are no car renters clubs, are there? No, they have car owners clubs. So you walk up to the car's there, the car's looking at you, you're looking at the car, you're feeling special because it's your car. It's got the color that you want. Yeah? In fact, you ordered that color. It's not just any old blue, it's royal blue. Yeah? And it's metallic. Nowadays, I think it only comes in metallic. It doesn't come in any other flavor. It's got all the options that you want. It's got the I can't remember the names now. Come on, help me out. The roof, the sunroof. It's got the heated seats. It's got the lane guidance. I know I'm old age now, right? I'm not keeping up with technology these days. So I'm saying lane guidance. You're like, Swami, that was like 500 years ago. when that technology came. In those days, you know, when I used to drive a car come with a sat nav that was big. Now you can see how far I am with technology, how much I've distanced myself from technology. Because technology used to make me happy, used to being the key word in that sentence. Doesn't anymore. So you're looking at the car's making you happy. Now you get into the car. You take a deep breath. This is the first day. First, second, give you a week. Like honeymoon period lasts for how long? Those days, 7 days, like Hadda Magul, remember? Yeah, so 7 days. 7 days of honeymoon time, right? So the first week of your car ownership, you get in, you inhale, take a deep breath. What do you get? New car smell. It doesn't even feel like getting into a car. You know, it feels like walking into a temple. Doesn't it? Remember how you open the door? Softly. It's like the day you first held your girlfriend's hand. The first day. That's how you open the car, with both hands. You know, like when you offer something to Swami Nuhanse, with one hand you offer and the other hand, you actually hold in the other hand. Yeah. When you offer alms today, like with one hand you have the spoon, with the other hand you're holding that hand. Out of respect. Yeah, in the same way, the first day you open the car, the door, right? One hand opening the, holding the latch, the other hand holding that arm. That's how you open it. You don't want to wake up the baby. So then you sit in your seat, almost feeling guilty that the seat has to bear your weight. Then you gently pull that seat belt. Nowadays, come on, you damn thing. But the first day, come to Papa. What's so funny is not so much how I say it. You know that's how you did it. You know that's what you did. You know. You remember. So you pull the seatbelt. You fasten it. Then you hold the steering wheel with both hands. Fortunately, you only have two. And then remember the first time. This man who'd never even got on his knees for the Buddha. Never worshipped his parents. But this time round, he's in his car. He's gone to the temple. So, there's God. Now, you have to worship. Take a trip down memory lane. Ask yourself. And then remember when you had to get the indicators. You know those, what do you call them? The indicator sticks. Levers. Yeah? You got to press it down, right? To turn left and then up to turn right. Still got that right? Thank you. So, when you had to turn left, remember how gentle you were with them. Remember? And then when it had to reset, the car does it automatically, but you were so gentle with it that you bring it back up softly. You don't want to hurt the car. It's like your baby. See, here's the deal. Now, all of this is to prove to you one point. How many of the moments that you spent with your car did you actually enjoy being the car owner, and the prestige and the honor and the joy that comes with being one, versus the fear of someone running into you, bumping into someone, a coconut falling on your car, because whenever you were to park somewhere, what did you have to do? You got to look around. And the damn birds that fly over your car, what do they do? Where do they decide to take a poop? Of all the places they could. Where do they decide to do that? On your car. When they could have chosen the windscreen, where do they choose? The bonnet, where it can cause damage to the paint. Yeah? It's as if they have something against you. They have a grudge. That's what they do. Do you remember this? Do you have this? It's only fair to ask another monk whether they remember this. Whereas in your case, you go through this still every day. Every day you go through this. See, honestly answer this question, car owners in the room. Do you spend more time enjoying your car or worrying about your car? I rest my case. So what did you pay 100,000 rupees for? 200,000 for? 300,000 for? 500,000 for? 2 million for? What did you pay? The car or the fear that came with it? How much for the car? How much for the fear? Get the bill. Ask them for an invoice. Today, I'm also driven in a car. Comes with zero fear. See, your cars don't have that option, does it? I ordered mine with that option. Zero fear. Therefore, zero regrets. Zero worries. When is that day going to come for you? Are you a car owner or are you a fear owner? Who serves whom? The car serves you or you serve the car? Is that what your precious human life has come to? Living a life full of fear. Like I said, like the woman who still beats herself up with a bat because she's so used to her husband beating her up. Here's what people do today. They buy things and attach themselves to them. It's not the buying that I have a problem with. It's not the buying that's a problem. It's attaching yourselves to these things and then you get beaten up by them. Because you're so accustomed to being in hell and the fear that came with it. You just can't do without it. You would feel really weird to be without fear and without sorrow. I ask you folks, dear mothers and dear fathers, mothers of mine and fathers of mine, I ask you, why, oh why, oh why must you put yourself through this? When you can be free of fear, there is a path, there is a way. It's possible to be driven in a car, even to drive a car. You don't have to be driven. You can drive a car and not live in fear. You know, in some countries, Swami Mohan says drive. Because there are no devotees to drive them around. And if they have to go to a sermon somewhere, then the only way they can get there, taking public transport, will take them forever. So, just imagine if I had to travel to a country where there are no Buddhists and there was no one to pay for a chauffeur. But someone needed the Dhamma. If I got there on foot, I had to travel across a desert. Then by the time I get there, it'll just be my dead body, no one to preach. And there's a car. If you see me driving the car, would you all leave the Swami Nase and the monastery and go, these people, they are liars. They've got no virtues, they're driving cars. What's virtue got to do with driving a car? You can only gauge my virtue by looking at my heart. Virtue or sila is how cool down you are. How cool you are. That is what sila is. How cool you are. How unvexed you are. How unbothered you are. That's what sila is. That's what virtue is. Because hurt people do what to others? They hurt. So for someone not to hurt someone else, how must that person be? Not hurt, right? So then what is sila? Someone who's cool within is cool without. So when you're driving that car, you're constantly worried about what might happen. Now, you know, experience is on your way back home. Even, you know, today itself, you can apply this principle that you're learning here today. On your way back home, as you walk into your car, your car's in the car park, as you walk up to your car, right, remind yourself this: I am a proud car owner. Okay? You can have that moment, that brief moment of joy. Allow yourself to have that. I mean, that's what you get at the end of the day, so might as well, right? I'm a proud car owner. Look at your car, get into your car. Take that deep, deep breath. You know, try and walk back to the first day you bought that car. After you get into your car, just remind yourself, right? Everyone in the car can do the same. If you're with your family, your wife, your husband, your children, right? Ask everyone, you know, you're all here, so you can all do this, right? Discuss amongst yourself, right? Let's do that on the way home. This is a practical homework on your way home. So you get into the car, right? We are proud car owners. Now, start driving. Start driving, you'll get to the gates of the college, right? College gates. When you're there, what do you have coming from either side? Traffic. In that moment, if you ignore the traffic, you can think about the fact that you are a proud car owner. You can't have two objects in the mind at the same time. Contemplate on this. I'm pulling you out of the lurch here. Contemplate on this. You can't take two objects into your mind at the same time. When you are contemplating on the fact that you are a proud car owner, you have to choose to ignore the traffic. When you are contemplating on traffic, you have to ignore the fact that you are a proud car owner. So now you're at the gate. What are you supposed to do? Enjoy being a proud car owner? Or watch for oncoming traffic? Which one? Oncoming traffic. If you do the other, what's going to happen? You are not for very long going to be a proud car owner. Yes. So you have to look out for oncoming traffic. Right. So now you look for oncoming traffic. There are passengers walking. There are cows going across the street. There are two-legged cows driving in cars. You know what I mean. Right. So you have to watch out for all of this. And then you finally turn your car onto the road. Now you're on the street. Now what do you have to do? Back to being proud car owner. Because then you have the bridge on the way to Rajagiri. Right? Some of your cars might be a low ride. Then you have to drive slowly over the bridge. Because otherwise what's going to happen? It's going to hit. Right? So you have to be very careful. You have to remember, right? This part of the road is narrow. This part of the road is bendy. This part of the road has potholes. Like this part of the road, there are people jumping across the street. When do you go back to enjoying being a proud car owner, I ask you? Remember the two chittas, one chitta can't have two objects. You can do one of these two things. Either enjoy being a proud car owner or drive your car conscious about the oncoming traffic and all the threats that are approaching you from every side. And then you have a rickshaw driver who drives past, so close to your car, and then you almost skip a beat. Then you have to swear at them as well, right? I mean, that also takes a while. Then there is someone who's trying to cross the road, so you have to stop and ask them to, you know, just wave them past. In this moment, you're not thinking about proud car owner. You have to focus on what's going on in the road. And then you walk up to Rajagiri, the main street. Now, just by the flyover. Now what goes? Now you have to decide which path you're going to take. Are you going to go around, do a U-turn? Are you going to go up the flyover? Right? These are the things you have to focus on. And then there are the traffic lights. Then there are people who walk up to the car maybe asking for some pennies. All the while you're thinking, what might they do to the car? Am I safe? And then as you're driving around, there's something along the road. Like maybe the vehicle that drove before you drop something on the road. So there's some debris on the road. Now, are you a proud car owner in this moment, or are you a worried car owner? When do you go back to enjoying being a car owner? When? 3 minutes later, your car goes tick, 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 you look at the dashboard, it says, service light on. It's time to service the car. 20 minutes into your drive, it says, fuel tank needs refueling. Proud car owner. When you drive to refuel your car, you feel like a proud car owner. Huh? And you look at the meter. Do you feel like a proud car owner? Of course you don't. Because you know it's costing you an arm and a leg. It's reminding you that. You know, when you bought the car, you wanted a 6-liter engine. But as you pull up to the petrol shed, now aren't you cursing yourself for it? When do you actually stop to enjoy your car? I'm asking you. But how much did you pay for it? You're still clearing the finance on it. You're still paying the debt. Even if it was money that you saved, do you remember the hours that you had to work just to save up the money? And the insurance that you have to pay? Why do you take out insurance? You're going to tell me because it's mandatory? No, only third-party insurance is mandatory. Why do you take out, what's the other one called? Full insurance. Why do you take out full insurance? Fear. Fear. What if? You can't bear to have a day when you can't think that you are a proud car owner. So the moment your car is damaged or totaled, you want the insurance company to come and replace your state of sanity as soon as possible. I have no qualms about you having a car, driving a car, using a car to get from place to place, because I do that myself. Don't own one, but I use one. What is this pen for? Let's just say God invented this pen. What did He invent this pen for? To write or to own? Which one? To write. So what are you and I doing owning this? What are you doing owning this pen? This was invented to write. So write then. Why own? When you write with it, name one bad thing that happens to you when you write with this. What are the disadvantages of writing with a pen? I don't mean in comparison to a pencil or anything else. I mean just a pen, right? What are the disadvantages? What are the risks involved? What are the issues with writing with a pen? None. It's just a pen because it's there to write. Okay, how about owning a pen? What are the advantages to owning a pen? You are a proud? What owner? Pen owner. Who knows that? Now, thank you. You know, when you walk out to this room and into the car park, do the cars say who they belong to? Let's say you've got the most expensive car in the land. Does the car say, I belong to that man over there? Does it say that to everyone? Does it? No. Well, there is one thing you can do. You can have your key, the remote unlock, and you can unlock it right, when everyone else is there. Yeah. So you can show everyone that is my car. But the car is not responding to your need for your need to display that it's your car. It's just responding to a signal. That's what the car is doing. The car has no intention or need or desire to show anyone that it belongs to you. That's just a sound that emanated from the speaker. It's just the car door unlocking. That's it. It is not intended to show that it belongs to you. Right? So even when you have a car, there is nothing about the car that shows that it belongs to you. So then where is this sense of belonging? It's only in the mind. Whose mind? the mind of the owner. That is all. That is all, ladies and gentlemen. That is all. Just so that you can have a sense of pride and honor and prestige that you own something. That is the only advantage that you get out of it. And that is also merely a figment of your own imagination. That's a fragment of your own imagination. You create that sense of ownership in your mind because that car can be driven by anyone who knows how to drive. Meaning, it doesn't belong to you, literally. In no absolute sense does that car belong to you. It's only a convention, which is why for a few dollars you can exchange the car. You can sell the car. When you sell the car, do you reprogram it or something? Are there parts of it that you have to keep for yourself and the rest can go to somebody else? Are there? No. When you sell the car, you sell the whole car. And now who does it respond to? Well, it doesn't respond to anyone. It responds to the key. It responds to a radio frequency. It responds to a turn of the wheel. That's what it responds to. It responds to the pedal. That's what it responds to. To pushes and pulls. That's what the car responds to. Not to you. Not to you. But you think that's my car. That's only in your mind. So for something that is purely mental, isn't this mental? Don't you think? For something that's purely mental, look at the price you're paying. Look at the fear that you have to put up with. You know, when you get down to the car park now, and if you see someone's, you know, scratched your car. Now, sometimes, you know, there are not in the school, but, you know, outside when you park your car, right? Someone, just for fun, they do it. Mischievous, you know, young lads. Then they got nothing better to do, right? They take another key or something sharp and they do that to your car. They scratch the car. Now, what can you think of from that point? Say you walk up to your car, you see that your car door has been scratched, you get into your car. Are you feeling like a proud car owner right now? Are you? Are you? No, what are you feeling right now? There you go. You're feeling disappointed? You're feeling like a deflated balloon, like I said earlier. Unsatisfied. A feeling of uneasiness, very uncomfortable feeling. You might even feel anger. Yeah? Are they good feelings? Are they good emotions? Are they wholesome emotions? Do they do you any good? Does it not start boiling your blood? Does it not make you grow older sooner? Huh? Does it not? Is that why you bought the car? So you could grow older, sooner, rather than later. I have no problem with you buying a car purely to drive one. No problem with that. And to get somewhere comfortably and safely. Nothing wrong with that. So next time you need a car, you don't need to go and buy a karate. You don't need to do that. Don't buy a cart. Buy a car. And if it comes with safety features, buy the safety features. Whatever you can afford, buy. Buy the best, the safest car that you can buy. Buy it. And if it allows you to travel in some kind of comfort, then buy it. So you don't need to buy one without the air conditioner. That's not the problem. Because these are physical discomforts, physical needs, physical requirements. To get somewhere safely is a physical requirement. Doesn't an Arahantan once want to travel safely? He would. If there are thieves, burglars, mugglers and robbers and murderers along a certain path, and if he can choose another path, he would take that path. I mean, you don't want to walk into trouble, do you? That's not sensible. That's madness. Rahatanvasa doesn't do that. Unless, of course, he knows that I can preach some Dhamma to them and transform them and help them become better men. If he knows that, he might give it a go. But he doesn't just walk into problems. He doesn't do that. He's not crazy. He's just become a Rahatanvasi. So if you can afford a safe car, afford one. They come with ratings, don't they? When I used to buy cars, they used to have these things called NCAP ratings. How safe a car was. So buy the safest car that you can afford. Buy the most comfortable car that you can afford. If your car comes with a feature to communicate with heaven, then buy one. That's fine. My problem is this. My problem is you buy something that you can't buy with money. You can't buy ownership with money. That comes with attachment. You have your car at home. The car salesman, when he handed the keys over to you, said, "Sir, I present to you your brand new car." There was one line in that word that was completely a lie. What was that? Your. Here's what he should have said. "Sir, I present to you a brand new car." But that wouldn't have made you feel special. You wouldn't have felt the service from them. You wouldn't have felt like they made it personal to you. You wouldn't have felt that customer service that you look for. Because they wouldn't have patted your ego. That's why you pay extra for. That's why there'll be two shops out there, they sell the same thing. But one shop will be more expensive than the other. You walk into that shop and they give you first class treatment. When you walk through the door, they say, "Good morning, madam." In the other shop, you have to open the door and walk in. And if you don't shut the door behind you, they say, "Hey, shut the door, will you? If you can manage to open it, why can't you manage to close it?" But the other shop, where it's a little bit more expensive, they'll open the door for you and they'll say, "Ayubovan." To which half the time you just respond with a nod. Don't you? Of course. Courtesy doesn't always get courtesy back in return. Not always. That's the way the world is. In the same way, when you say thank you, don't expect everyone to say you're welcome. When you say sorry, don't expect everyone to say it's okay. Oh, I'm sorry also. Don't expect that. Courtesy doesn't always beget courtesy. Doesn't always. So that's why in one shop it's more expensive. Because they give you first class treatment. Why is first class more expensive than economy class? Do you get there sooner? Of course, because the front part of the fuselage gets to the destination quicker than the rear part, right? Ah, that's why. Got it. Now I understand. If the rear of the plane fails, won't the front of the plane also fail? If the rear of the plane crashes into the ocean, won't the front also? So am I suggesting you shouldn't fly first class? Am I? No. I wouldn't be such a fool to say that you shouldn't fly first class. Fly first class for the right reasons. If you have to get to a business meeting or some other engagement where you have to be sharp on time and you can't be delayed because there are lots of passengers, right? Fly first class. What's wrong with that? Fly. Nothing wrong with that. If you need that comfort and, you know, sitting in an economy class seat for long is going to give you, you know, aches and pains and you're going to get, you know, your legs are going to start to hurt and you start to feel bloated and all that discomfort. And if you can afford first class, fly first class. If you see a Swami Nuhansa flying in first class, are you going to think, "To these monks, using our money, flying first class"? Are you going to think that way? Don't. What right do we have to judge others? What right do we have? We don't. I mean, even if you don't consider the aspect that I'm explaining to you, if the Swami Nuhansa is flying there to help so many people, preach the Dhamma and free themselves from suffering, an entire samsara of suffering, where would you fly them? Which class? If I could, I would put them in the pilot seat. Shouldn't they be flying in first class? I'm not suggesting that therefore Swami Nansi should fly in first class. That's not what I'm saying. But my point is, don't judge someone just because they fly first class or middle class or business class or economy class, whatever. It's not our place to judge anyone. Have you never been the victim of being misjudged? And have you never wondered, why don't people ask me before they make judgments about me? Don't you? We've all been there. But then we do the same thing, don't we? So anyhow, when you're driving the car, you can't enjoy the joy of being a proud car owner. Because one chitta can't take two objects at the same time. So you tell me, count on your way home, right? The moments. Right? On your way home today, count the number of moments where you can actually focus on you being a proud car owner and actually, you know, be thrilled about that and enjoy that, versus the number of moments you have to worry and be in fear and dread oncoming traffic, people jumping across the street, the lights going red and green, right? And then taking the bends and turning, and then all sorts of things going on in the road all the way until you pull up and park your car in your garage at home. From the point you leave the car park today to the moment you get back home, you come and you don't have to tell me, I think you'll know the answer, but do it anyway. Just so that I can prove my point to you. No, just so that you can prove this point to yourselves. And then ask yourself this question, was it worth it? If it was, then continue doing what you're doing. If it wasn't, then come and do something that is worth doing. I always have to ask you this question. Why do you put yourself through this? It's not buying a car that I have a problem with. Are you all clear on that? Right? Don't tell me now, Swami Nasa, what are you saying? I shouldn't buy a car? You're suggesting I should take bus? You're suggesting I should walk to work? No, that's not what I'm saying. Please only take what I tell you, don't read between the lines. It's very dangerous when you do that, because then you interpret what you understand. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying buy a car, buy the best car that you can afford. But buy it for the right reasons. Don't buy ownership because the salesman never sold you that. Yes or no? The salesman never sold you ownership. What did they sell you? A car. They sold you a car. See, let's imagine you are buying a car to then gift it to somebody else. You're buying a car to gift it to your son on his 25th birthday. Let's just say. Now the car salesman sells it to whom? Sells it to you. If they sold you ownership in addition to the car, right? They should only sell you, say your child's 25th birthday is in a week's time. They should only sell you 1 week's worth of ownership, right? Because you're only going to keep it for a week. So then you should be able to negotiate with them on that basis. Shouldn't you? You should be able to say, Mister, I'm only going to keep this car for a week. So can we negotiate the price? Only charge me for the car, not for the ownership, because I'm only going to keep it for a week. So can we negotiate on the price, please? What do you think the salesman is going to tell you? You can think what he's going to tell you. I'm not going to say it out loud. He's going to think you've gone nuts. So are you going to argue then that the salesman sold you ownership? Did they? No, they didn't. So where did the ownership come from then? In your own mind. And what came along with that? Fear? And grief. That's the part I have a problem with. Fear and grief. Not the car. By the car. Don't buy what the salesman doesn't sell you. I'll say that one more time. Buy the car. Because that is what the salesman is selling you. Don't buy ownership. Don't hope to buy ownership. Don't walk into the store looking to buy ownership, because that is not for sale. You are a thief if you walk out of that store with anything more than the car. You're walking out with something that you didn't buy. If so, the alarm should go off. Like it does in some supermarkets. Yeah? When they don't take off the detectors, when you walk out the store, the alarms go off, right? Yes, that's why the alarms go off. When you walk out the car with ownership. Which alarms? Fire alarms. Don't they? Don't the fire alarms go off? Yes, fear. The moment you drive the car out of the car park, out of the showroom, the moment you drive the car out of the showroom, and there's oncoming traffic, and there are birds in the sky, and there's debris on the road, and the elements are out there to get you. Just, you know, we've all been through these emotions, ladies and gentlemen. Just, only thing we didn't do is we didn't take a lesson from it, that's all. Nature around you, life has been trying to teach you these lessons right from the day you started living. From day one of your time on this planet, you opened your eyes, you opened your ears, and environment, Mother Nature, life has been trying to teach you these lessons. But we were just not willing to learn. That's all. That is why we suffered. The Buddha became a Buddha upon becoming one with nature. That was his realization. He realized that nature is all there is. So he came to know and learn all the lessons of nature. That is what he encapsulated into three words: anicca, dukkha and anatta. That is what he did. All he did was explain nature. Once he explains nature, physics is also included in that. Chemistry is also included in that. Biology is also included in that lesson. Geography is included in that lesson. Human emotions included in that lesson. Devas and Brahmas all included in that lesson. This is the single principle that describes everything in this universe. Anicca, dukkha and anatta. Life has been trying to teach us these lessons. You've just been very indifferent to it. That's all. So don't walk out of the showroom with anything more than that which is sold to you. If you do, the alarms will go off. And that is why you have suffered so far. If you think of this pen anything more than an object to write with, okay? If you think of this pen anything more than an object to write, I mean, you could think of this as a paperweight if you wanted, because it is also a paperweight. It is. It is. You can use it as a door stopper, because it is also a door stopper. It is. But here's what it is not. Something to own. God never invented anything to own. That's why when Adam and Eve wanted to own things, God said, out, 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 out. Go and fend for yourselves. Not in my garden of paradise. They wanted to own things. No. You can't own things, because nothing was invented in this world to own. They were invented to use. See, I use a robe. You want this robe? As if, right? I'm willing to give it. Come and tell me, Swami Nuhansa, I want to own this robe. I say, no, go fly one. Swami Nuhansa, I want to use this robe. Okay, fine, I'll give it. Come and tell me. Swami says, I want to use this robe. All right, I'll give it. I want to own this robe. No, you don't deserve it. Don't own the robe. Because you think, I own this robe. You know, if I own this robe, I won't even be able to die. You can't die if you own things. All that happens is, your mind separates from the body. You're not dead. You come back. To finish unfinished business. To own, you'll have to come back. You'll have to keep coming back. I've given you the example of a child, I've given you the example of a car. How many more examples do you need me to give you? Tap into your intelligence. Use common sense. As much as I have a part to play, you also have a part to play. I'm giving you a couple of examples. You need to be intelligent enough to apply your own examples and begin to wonder, my God, good grief. Swami Nanda is right. All these years, we've been living our lives owning things. And look at where it got us. Make a mental list of the things you own. And you have also made a list of all the things you suffer because of. Simple as. Gone. If daddy is going to drive you home, you are the passenger in the car, think about this. Make a list of all the things you own. You have also made a list. This is two in one. You have also made a list of all the things on whose behalf you suffer. They are never separate. Yes or no? Make, if you can, a list of things you don't own. Make a list of things you don't own. You have also made a list of all the things on whose behalf you don't suffer. I want to help you. I don't want to own you. But do you remember 10 years ago, a young boy about your age came up to you and said, Nangi, I want to help you. You know what they didn't tell you? They also wanted to own you. What happened then? Now, you both suffer. Because you didn't stop at them wanting you, at the sight or at the sound of their word, you also began to want them. You know the biggest punishment you can give to someone you love? I know you might not want me to say this, but you invited me to talk, so I'm going to talk. Right, you can plug your ears now if you don't want to hear this. The worst thing you can say to someone you love is, I love you. Here's why. If they didn't love you until then, until you walked up to them and expressed your love, if they didn't love you until then, upon hearing these words, they might be tempted to love you in return. What you have just given them is fear and grief. Well done. Would you do that to someone you love? Would you give them fear and grief? What kind of a lover is that? If you truly love someone, what must you do? What is the Mahasangha doing to you right now? Draining out of you fear and grief. Giving you a way to think so that you are free from fear and grief. That is love. But everyone else who's walked into your life, the moment they said to you, I love you, those were the three words that completely ruined the happiness in your life. Because where you didn't have fear and grief took root. Because nowadays it's even more terrible Because if you don't reciprocate those feelings and you in turn say, no, you know what, I don't care, you love me, I don't love you. Then what will they say? Ah, really? We'll see about that. We'll see about that. Next they'll come through your father. Then they'll come through your brother. Then they'll come through your best friend. Won't they? Won't they? Yes, you know what I'm talking about. Then they'll start dropping hints. Then they'll make life impossible for you until you say, okay, fine, I love you. Remember, if you live with people who want things from you, don't expect to be happy. Don't trust a man who wants something from you. I couldn't put it any simpler than that. Don't trust anyone who wants something from you. You don't believe me, do you? But you know I'm right. You don't like to believe what I'm saying. You don't like it. I know you don't like it. But this is the ugly truth. Because if someone wants something from you and they want it badly, they will get it somehow. It matters not whether you're a man or a woman. Those days, men used to be safe in that department. Turn down a woman, right? And then she'd have to go and find someone else. But nowadays, not even the men are safe. First the father, then the mother, then comes a kattariya. Whether you like it or not, you will be crawling to her house on your knees. Be careful where you put your toothbrush or your hairbrush. Be careful. Because if she wants you, she'll have you. If he wants you, he'll have you. So if someone comes up to you and says, I love you. The end. Do you say yes or no? Which one? Parents, tell me. Huh? If you have children and they're still of a young age, actually, you know what? It doesn't matter now whether you are young or not. Your daughter's married, let's just say. Your daughter's married. She's been married 3 years, happily married. She also has a 6-month-old child as well. Someone gets feelings for her. Another man. Now he wants it. First you try convincing him. What are you saying? My daughter's married. She's even a mother. So fine. She's still fine. I still want her. Yes or no? What are you going to say? Seriously think about this. Seriously think about this. Seriously think about this. Think beside the, you know, this is an example. This is, you know, this is not a joke. The only reason you have still managed to keep your sanity, ladies and gentlemen, is because it hasn't happened to you yet. That's why. Run. Run as far as you can and hide. So you never have to face this situation. Run and hide. If you have a daughter, if you have a son, run and hide. Run. Run to the moon. Are you safe if you are poor or if you are rich? I asked you this question last week also, and ask you again. Are you safe if you are poor or rich? Ugly or pretty? When are you safe? Where are you safe? Living in Colombo 7? Or Colombo 1? Where are you safe? Because why are you not safe? Why are you not safe? You are living with people who want things from you. How can you be safe? How can your children be safe? The Mahasangha, and I mean genuine Sangha, people who are actually on the path to Nibbana and want nothing from this world, all they want is to get out of this world. So if all someone wants is to get out of this world, what do they have to, what dealings do they have with worldly things? If you know that you're going to pick yourself up and travel to another country to settle down, right? Are you going to go and open a new bank account? Are you going to go and buy new land? Are you? If you know you're going to go and settle down in another country for good, never to come back again. Are you? No. Because you have nothing more to do with this world, right? With this country. Wherever that country might be. Now you want to buy land in the country you're going to. You want to invest your money there. You want to open your accounts there. Are you going to start up a new relationship? Are you? No. Because you won't have nothing to do with this place because you're leaving now. You're going to migrate. There are people in and amongst us who want to migrate from this world. There are such people. They have nothing to do with this world. They live in it until they're here. For their sustenance, that's all. They live in this world just while they're here. But they don't want any more relationships. They don't want any more dealings. They don't want any property. They don't want any land. They don't want your money. They don't even want you. They don't want your respect. They don't want your love. They don't want your kindness. They don't want you to regard them highly. They don't care. You know, if you have to leave tomorrow, today is the last day you're going to be in this country, your next door neighbor comes and swears at you. Are you going to go and teach him a lesson? Are you going to go to the police and file a complaint? You're leaving tomorrow. Huh? That's why we have no scores to settle. We have no scores to settle. Praise us, blame us. If it makes you happy, then let it be. No scores to settle. Because we no longer have any dealings with this world. But we are here, while we are still here. If the next day we get on the flight and fly ourselves out to wherever, Amarapura, not the Nikaya. Amarapura is the name for Nibbana. The deathless realm. You don't exist there because anything that exists dies. It's not somewhere you exist. Nivanpura, the land of Nibbana. That is where we are looking to head. No dealings. Just here while we are here. See, but you don't live with people like that. You don't live in the noble associates. You don't live in noble association. No Satpurushan Mahanses, no Kalyanamitras. But at the end of every meritable deed, there's a gatha that you recite. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo satan samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Do you know the meaning of that? Imina punya kammena. By the power of this meritorious deed. Mame bala samagama. Which mama is this? Ruan mama or Saman mama? Which mama? This is not any mama. Mame bala samagama. May I abstain, by the power of these merits, may these merits free me from ignoble association. May these merits distance me from ignoble association. Satan samagamo hotu, yava nibbana pattiya. May I be able to associate with noble ones. Yava nibbana pattiya. And from now till nibbana. That is what you resolve at the end of every meritorious deed. You bring your hands together and you chant this gatha. And you still live at home. And you're already looking for property in Colombo 7, aren't you? You want to move there? If Colombo 7 is not fine, then you need Central London. You want to move there? If that's not enough, then New York, Washington, Los Angeles. Where? Where is Satan Samagam? Where is the Satpurusha Vahansis? Where are the noble associations? You keep saying it, but you keep doing something else. What you say is not reflected in what you do. That is why happiness still seems like a dream for you. Because you are living with people who want something from you. They will not let you be happy. They will let you be as long as they are happy. They will not let you be happy. In fact, they don't care about your happiness. Here's what they care about. They'll let you be happy. No. They'll let you be kama as long as they are happy. Your spouse will let you be. As long as they are happy. Your boss will let you be. As long as they are happy. Your neighbors will let you be. As long as they are happy. Your girlfriend and your boyfriend. Your spouse-to-be will let you be as long as they're happy. The Mahasangha will let you be as long as you are happy. If you are not happy, then they have something to give you. That is the difference. I hope you are convinced why the Mahasangha doesn't want anything from you. Because we are leaving tomorrow. Not for a week. No. So I don't need you to watch over my cat while I'm away for a week. I don't want you to keep an eye over my property while I'm away for a week. Because when I go, I'm going for good. So there is nothing you need to do for me. All I'm saying is, why don't you jump on this train so that we can both go? What you don't remember is that is why you were born human. That you need reminding. That is what I'm doing here. Otherwise, why would you pay $1 million to buy a car which you can only enjoy when you are not driving, when you are not sitting in it, when you don't have to watch over it, when you don't have to lock it, when you don't have to service it? I mean, when do you enjoy it? When do you enjoy your house? For most people, when I say house, you think mortgage. For most people, I say house, you think mortgage. I said house, why are you thinking mortgage? I say house, you think safety. You think precautionary measures. You think CCTV cameras. You think gates. You think barbed wire. You think walls. This is what you think. You think locking the doors. You think locking the windows. This is what you think. Because you own a house. You don't just live in one. Houses were not built to own. The builders, remember the builders? They came and built the house, right? What did they give you? A house. To do what? Live in. You're doing something more than that. You are owning it. What does that make you feel? House pride. You decide whether that is a blessing or a curse. You decide. I also live in a kuti. You offered it. You built it and you offered it. I use it to live in. I don't own it. If when I head back today, some other Swamin Vahanse is in that kuti, all I'll say, Swamin Vahanse, I have another robe in the cupboard. Would you mind? He says, no. The robe is also mine. Everything in this property is mine. Okay. I'll go and look for another robe. And the Buddha has taught us how to find robes. These days it's a little bit more difficult because if you go into the cemeteries, right, and you start pulling out one of those robes, people will come and shoot you. They'll either think you're crazy or it's their dead father. Even after they're dead, who are they still? My father. So that's my dead father's cloth. Don't you touch. Either the daughter will get you or the father who is after death, the spirit still there. Because when he died, he couldn't let go of his clothes. You know, ladies and gentlemen, Guru Nanak said the wonderful thing in yesterday's sermon. He said, if you are attached to things, you better not die. Write that down. So that's what you're all going to do, right? You're not going to die, right? Which one can you stop? Death or attaching to things? But most people are far more concerned about trying to prolong death as much as they can. If they put in half of that energy, a tenth of that energy, into actually freeing themselves from attachment, they will not need to fear death. That's the thing. People are so ignorant. Ignorant fools. Not you. I'm saying people. People who have not come across the Dhamma are ignorant fools. Don't you agree? Wouldn't you say the same thing? I have proven it to you logically. Why it is so? That they are ignorant fools. Not because they hurt me, harm me or anything. I've got nothing to do with that. There's no part of me in that equation. They're ignorant fools because they think happiness comes to them from the outside world. They think happiness comes to them from the other people, other things. And so what do? They go on attaching themselves to all these things out there in the hope that one day it will bring them happiness. Does it? Does it? No. You know something Einstein once said? He said, if you keep on doing the same thing expecting a different result, that, my dear fellow men, is insanity. He was right. Don't you keep doing the same thing expecting a different result. When you had your first child, what did you want from your child? Happiness. What did you get? Fear. So what did you try and do? Have another one. When you got married the first time? Come on. When you got married the first time, what did you want out of that marriage? Happiness. What happened? Betrayal. Heartache. Almost a heart attack. Then, ultimately, she left. Oh, someone else took her. Then what did you do? You found another one. What are you on? Happy cow. You know, not the Buddha, I'm saying Einstein said this. Put the Buddha to aside. Einstein said it. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is insanity. I'll forgive you because you had no alternative when you made those unwise choices. But now you do. Now you can't make use of the same excuse. Most people don't have an alternative because there's vexation building up. You need to free yourself from vexation. You have to do something. Yeah? And if you think happiness is going to come from the next wife, you have to go and get her. You know that, you know, the previous wife taught you many lessons. You remember them. They've left an indelible mark, sometimes even physically. But still, the vexation's building up, so you have no choice but to go get another one. What do you do? No alternative. But now you have an alternative. I'm trying to show you what the Buddha has given you. You know, the Buddha has given you an alternative, one that you never had. Yes or no? I'm asking all of you and each and every one of you. Has the Buddha not given you an alternative that you never thought you had? There you go. How much are you willing to give up for him then? By him, I don't mean him because he's no longer with us. I mean the cause that he represented. The cause. He gave you an alternative because he wanted you to choose that alternative. So that you could finally walk the right path to happiness. The Noble Eightfold Path. No other path takes you to happiness, ladies and gentlemen. Ekayanoyam bhikkave maggo sattanam visuddhiya. There is only one path that leads all sentient beings to happiness. That is the Noble Eightfold Path. No other path. How do we know this? How do we know that no other path leads us to unconditional happiness? Who should we ask? Which book should we read? You need to go to the library to check that. Whose evidence? We are all evidence. That's why you have all come here looking for an alternative. This is the Buddha's alternative. The Buddha's guide to happiness. It's an alternative to the choices that you have all been making throughout your lives. Might as well, folks. You know, there may be some who will ask, what if Swami knows that the Buddha got it wrong? What if the Buddha got it wrong? You know, you are asking us to walk this path. You're asking us to come and become Anagarikas and Anagarikas one day and become monks and enter into the sasana and go on to attain Nibbana. What if that doesn't work out? So here's my question in return. Did you check all the right things and do the balances before you chose all the other things to do? All the other paths that you took until the Noble Eightfold Path was presented to you. All of the other paths that you took, how many of them? Countless. Yeah? Becoming a mother, becoming a father, becoming a friend, becoming an enemy. And all the different professions that you've tried, you've dabbled your fingers in. All the different things you've eaten, all the places you've been, all the films you've seen, all the things you've done. All of these things were paths, weren't they? Paths to what? What were you hopeful? That they would get you to the destination of what? Happiness. Did they? No. So it was okay to choose those paths before checking them. But when the Buddha comes and says, there is another path. Now people are, very unsettled. What if that's the wrong path? There's no better, there's no English term for this that quite describes what I have to say. But how kalakani, ladies and gentlemen? You know, just that thinking process. Just for one to question. What if this path is wrong? Well, what about all the other paths that you have chosen so far? Have they been right? I mean, is there anything you have to sacrifice? I ask you. Have any of you found anything of value, anything that was worth your efforts, that you have to now sacrifice to walk the path that the Buddha laid down for you? Anyone? Anyone? Are your children yours to keep? Are your husbands and wives yours to keep? Are the houses you have, the property you have, the cars you have, is your prestige that you have earned yours to keep? Will they know you after you're gone? Huh? You will be the late mister for some time. After that, you will be in the toilet, mister. People will not know about you. Your children will give you an almsgiving maybe for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. After that, they have things to do. They'll forget you. I was thinking about this yesterday. You know, people who don't even walk into the temple, even after they're dead, and with no devotion, no commitment to the sasana, after they're dead, it is only the sasana that is there to benefit them. But while they're alive, they don't want anything to do with the sasana. They don't come to the temple or anything. There are some people like that, unlike you. They claim to be Buddhists, some not, right? But there's nowhere to benefit them. But ultimately, when all is said and done, and after they have failed utterly in life, and they are now dead, and now they have become pretas or whatever, now the children have to come to the temple and offer alms and invite them. At least now come and get some merits. Then they come. Then they come. When they could have come earlier. If they had come then, they would not need to have come now. So what do you have, what have you all achieved that you need to sacrifice? Is there anyone in this room who can put their hand up and say, Swami Nansa, I am not willing to walk the path that the Buddha laid down for me because I have to sacrifice X, Y, or Z. What is that thing that you have to sacrifice? Because if you tell me that is what you have to sacrifice, you have to prove to me that that brings you eternal happiness. Give me one. We don't have time for many. Give me one. See, I'm making it easy for you. Right? I'm even saying we don't have time for a lot, so don't all stand up and give me things. Just give me one. No one. There is nothing to sacrifice because we have achieved nothing. But talk to a group of young people, especially their parents, and tell them, you know, let your son come and experience the delight, the you know, this wonderful Buddha sasana. Give them up for 2 years. Just 2 years, let them experience this. No, Swami, no, for 2 years I have to send them to Australia. For their education I have to send them. What, to get something worthwhile? Something that lasts forever? No. Where's your PhD from your last life? Where is it? Where's your certificate? Where's your graduation from your last life? Where is it? All gone. But if you had become a sotapanna in your last life, you wouldn't need to be here today. You'd be well on your path to Nibbana. Most likely, you may not even come back as humans. Up, up, up and up. Very rarely does a human, does a sotapanna be born as a human. Very rarely. It is actually for the merits of all everyone else that sotapannas are born among us as a jata sotapanna. By our merits, they come into this world because most of the time, when they're dead, they are sent into the heavens. There is nothing quite like becoming a sotapanna. There's nothing quite like realizing the truth. That is what becoming Sotapanna is. It's not a badge that you get to wear on your sleeve or on your lapel. It's not a crown that you get to wear on your head. It's not a crest. It's just a realization of the truth. Your purpose. Why am I here? Is there anything that is more worth than that? For you to understand why you're here in the first place. Why you suffer. As I always say, wake up to the truth, ladies and gentlemen. You know, enough years have passed you by now, haven't they? How many years have you now lived your life? Living a lie? Look at all the promises that people made you. And you fell for each and every one of them. Just look at your lives. Don't think I'm taking pity on you. It's not that. I'm empathizing with you. And this is not even sympathizing. I'm empathizing with you. Because I was there, so I have a right. You might ask me, what right do you have, Swaminathan, to talk to us like that? The right I have is, I was also there. That is, it is by that right that I speak to you. Look at all the lies that people fed you and you just swallowed them. Whatever line of work you're in, did someone not tell you, do that and you will be happy? Get to the top of that. Get to the pinnacle of that and you will be happy. You will feel accomplished. Have you? Have you felt accomplished? What are you doing here then? What have you come here to accomplish then? Why are you still angry? Why do you still get upset? Why are you still annoyed? You know you don't want to be angry, but you can't control yourself. So how has all the riches you've earned helped you in that regard? It has done naught for you. Naught. But someone said that is what you ought to do. So you did it. Why? They wanted something from you. So they had to give you something to chew on. That's the carrot. You know, when you are growing up, right, there are people who are your elders. They need you to be doctors when they're old enough. You want me to say that again? When you're young, the people who you're going to go and ask, who should I be when I grow up? They remember that when you grow up, they'll be much older, so they need doctors to look after them. So what will they ask you to do? Become a doctor. Of course, society needs doctors. People have problems, they need to get resolved, so they need lawyers. If everyone was so willing to give up, why do we need lawyers? Don't you think the very reason we need lawyers is because people are always fighting for themselves? Isn't selfishness the mother that creates the necessity for lawyers? Selfishness. Because if people are willing to give up, you want land? Take it. You want this? But if someone says, no, it's mine. The other one says, no, I want it. No, it's mine. I want it. No, it's mine. Well, let's take it to court. Because in civil society, you can't fight. You can't murder each other. You have to take it to court. You have to have a peaceful way of resolving conflicts. But that's where there are conflicts. Even in the Buddha's time, some monks who had forgotten why they had come into the sasana had conflicts amongst themselves. You must, if you ever get a chance, right, you can read some of the Tripitaka and the Sutras and the Vinaya particularly. Not saying you ought to, but in some instances where the Buddha has admonished his monks, my gosh, I mean, if I was there, I'd wet myself. The ways in which he would admonish his monks, reminding them, you foolish man,
For what purpose did you ordain?
He used to ask his monks.
No, you'd stop breathing for a second. Your heart would skip a beat. This is the Buddha. He wouldn't let his monks go just like that. Because he wanted to remind them, you have come, jumping over so many hurdles, passing all those obstacles, you have come finally into robes. You are just there, can't you taste Nibbana, you foolish man? You're a stone's throw away from Nibbana. What are you doing? Let go of these petty desires. Discipline yourself. Walk the noble path I have so clearly and well defined and laid down for you. Why are you wasting your time like this? The Buddha would say. Honestly, if I was there, I'd wet myself just listening to it. That is the compassion with which, that is the love that he gave everyone. Because he wanted nothing out of it. So if you live among people who want something from you, may God bless you. If you really want to be happy, and if you really want to be among people who genuinely care about nothing more than your own goodness, I don't see any other place on this planet other than in the presence of noble associates. I will say this to my grave. You can hold me to this. If I ever say anything differently, any day, from this day to my grave, you can come and ask me, Swami Nahansa, that day you told us, no one other than the noble associations, but today you tell us, you can go and be with so and so and so and so and still be happy. Which one is true, you can ask me. I will take this truth to my grave, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to be happy and amongst people who want nothing other than your wellness, your goodness, you have to be among noble associations. Nowhere else will you find it. Mothers and fathers will come somewhat close. Somewhat. But there are parents who will disown their children if they do too much. And if it brings dishonor, discredit, disfame to the family, there will be some mothers and fathers, they'll disown their children. You will not step foot on this in this house ever again. Out. I'm no longer your father. You have dishonored our family. Because sometimes to those parents, the name of the family, that prestige that comes with the family name, that is more important than their children. Is that right or wrong? That is not what I'm here to settle. I'm not here to say whether that is right or wrong. I'm just here to say, if you want to be among people who care about nothing other than your own, your happiness, your well-being, and your goodness, and if you seek that kind of association anywhere other than the Mahasangha, by the Mahasangha, I don't necessarily mean just monks. Bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, upasaka, upasika. Because they want nothing other than giving up. That's all. If giving up is what you want, what do you need back? If giving up is what you want to do, what do you want in return? That question makes no sense, right? If giving up is what you want to do, what do you want in return? Exactly. That's why the Mahasangha is the only individuals you can trust. They don't want anything in return from you. Normally when people smile at you, they want you to smile back. When you give something to someone, they want you to say thank you. Even if they're the king and you're the beggar. They'll want you to say, Paswan dahasakata budhu anna deve anvahansa. Thank you so much for your good grace and your kindness. You have been so generous to me. And upon hearing these words, the king feels very proud that he's king and he's been able to do something for his subjects. Because the king sees himself and he sees the subjects. I hope these words make an impact on you, ladies and gentlemen. I really do. Nothing more and nothing less than your Nibbana. That's all. That is all the Mahasangha wants, your Nibbana. If you are not interested in Nibbana, that's fine. Then we don't want that either. But I believe you are. Last week, a lady woke up to me and said, Swaminathan sir, a couple of weeks ago we came to a Dakkineyo event at the monastery, the last one we had. And I was so joyed to hear these words from this lady. She said, Swaminathan sir, I always thought that you were the best preacher. I've never heard anything quite like your sermons before. So I said, now what happened, madam? So when I went to the monastery, I got to listen to another Swaminathan sir. And my God, that was one heck of a sermon. I said, sadhu, sadhu. That's exactly the point I've been trying to make. It is not I who is your savior. It is the Mahasangha. It is the Mahasangha. As soon as I got back to the monastery, I walk up to that Swaminathan sir, because the lady identified the Swaminathan sir and said, Swaminathan sir, I want to share with you. A lady came up to me today and she said that she'd heard you speak and give a sermon, and she was over the moon after having heard you speak. And he said, isn't this what our teachers have gifted us? That's what he said. Right then and there he said, may this worship be to my teachers. That is what he said. Right then and there. The truth is, this is what Guru Hanro does with us, with all of us. This is what Budhu Hanro did with all of us. People from all walks of life, people who were lost, people who were in despair, people who didn't know right from wrong, left from right, up from down, they were lost, utterly lost. To them, the Buddha would call, come here. Come here, my child. And as the Buddha beckoned them, if they had the merits, that was also a key ingredient, if they had the merits, they would feel something inside them. Something. Don't know quite what it is, but they'd feel something inside them. And they would feel like they had to respond to that call. So they would walk up to the Buddha. You called, sir? Yes. Listen to what I have to say. And upon hearing these words, their lives would change. Like it never had done before. And then all they wanted to do was their salvation and salvation for all. So they chose a life of monkhood, so that they could commit themselves. This is the only reason why one should come to monkhood. If you want to commit yourself to this cause, that's all. Freeing myself from suffering and freeing as many men, women and children in this world from suffering. If that is what you feel your cause is, then the sasana is for you. If you feel it's only you who wants to attend Nibbana, you don't care about anybody else, then perhaps you can do it in your own time, at your own pace. Because if it's just you are worried about, then who cares when that's going to happen? Right? If it's just you are worried about. But if you feel the same about others, if you want others to also benefit from the cause of the Buddha Sasana, then I invite such people. Come forth. You can't be people, I don't believe there can be anyone in this room who cares only about their salvation. Answer this question for me. Last question. Remember when you were much younger, just a young boy, just a young girl, when you got something nice to eat, what did you do? You shared it. You either shared it with your siblings, if you had none, you shared it with your best friend. If you knew your best friend you'd be meeting at school the following day, you would keep half of it and go and share it with them, or you'd take the whole thing and then split it in half. You'd eat half and give the other half to your friend. You were never one who wanted to enjoy the best things in life for yourself. Yes or no? There you go. It is not in your system. It is not in your blood to enjoy the best things in life all by yourself. In fact, you wouldn't have come into the human realm if you were like that. That is where animals go. And beings even lower than that. All for myself and for nobody else. Greed. Greed. If you're greedy, you can't become a human being. You can become a human being and then be greedy. But greed cannot make you a human being. You have to have the need to give. That is what you are like. That is in your temperament. It's in your blood. Therefore, when I say the Buddha is here, the doctrine that helps people attain salvation is here, the sasana is here, nibbana is here, what do you want to do? Exactly. Just for myself, or for me as much as others. There you go. For you as much as others. Therefore, those who are here, who feel they've still got the energy, they've still got the vitality, they've still got the oomph that it takes to share the best things in life with the people that you love, the people that you care about. Come forth. Step forward. Step forward. The world needs people like you. Because the world needs superheroes. There aren't enough going round. This world needs superheroes. They don't all come in capes, but some come in robes. This world needs people who care not only about themselves, but about others. And are willing to give the best things in life. Just like you gave the best things in your life to your friends, to your brother, to your sister. Aren't you all my brothers and sisters? Is it only brothers and sisters from this lifetime that counts? All that's changed is a different body, that's all. In fact, if you consider purely the mind, then it's just another chitta in the stream of chittas. Isn't it? All that is different from our previous existence when you and I were brothers was merely we had different bodies. We came from the same mother. This time round, the same chitta in that stream. Right? Now we are back together again. So, aren't you all brothers and sisters? And this is why we are here, sharing with you the best things that life has to offer. What does your mother do when she gets something? When she gets the best of something, what does she do? Have it all by herself? Most mothers will know this. You don't have it at all. Some of the best things you got, you didn't even know what it tasted like. Because you kept it for your children. Most mothers did that. Most fathers did that. If you had a mother and a father just like I had mine, and the way they were, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And you do the same. But in this asana, you can't do that. You can't just give to others and not have it yourself, because the way this works is, you can only give what you have already had. In fact, it's like regurgitating. You can only give what you have already had. Like a mother feeds her child the milk that flows out of her breast. It's what she has had. Isn't it? That's how this asana works. The sasana needs more mothers so that they can feed young children, innocent children who are hungry, who are thirsty. They need to be fed the milk of Dhamma. The Buddha created many mothers before he passed away. The great arahants were them. And even to this day, there will be arahants somewhere. This world would not be rid of arahants for as long as the Buddha Sasana prevails. I'm not asking you to come in just because you have to help other people. This is not the good Samaritans. I'm asking you to come because, first of all, you need to help yourself. So if you still have youth on your side, if you have energy on your side, right, then why not? The world needs superheroes. And they don't come from Mars. They are born within you. Think about the car as you walk out and get into it. Think about it. Promise to yourself that you will. Because then these words will begin to start to make an impact, a change in your thinking process. Ask yourself the question, by the time you get home, how many moments of me driving my car did I actually enjoy as a proud car owner versus the number of moments I simply suffered of fear and grief? Then the answers will be there, the numbers will be there to prove the point. So don't take my word for it. Try it and see. Try it out for yourself. If I'm wrong, come and let me know. Now, Swami, no answer. For most of the time, I really enjoyed being the proud car owner. You are wrong. I will eat my hat. Thankfully, I don't have one now. Truth be told, if you're going to come and tell me that I was wrong, you haven't done it properly. If the answer in the back of the book is wrong, chances are you haven't done the sum properly. Very unlikely the answer is wrong. In this case, impossible. Right, let's conclude for today then. I've given you something to do, okay? This was not just a motivation speech. I've given you something to do. This is the Dhamma. You need to apply it. On your way back home, you all, each and every one of you, young and elderly, you all have something to do. Contemplate on this. How many moments did you enjoy being a proud car owner versus the number of moments where you had to drive in fear that something untoward might happen to you? And then ultimately, when you get down, open the door, close the door, look at each other's faces, and you can all ask the question from each other, was it worth it? If it was, you needn't come next week. If it wasn't, still you needn't come next week, because next week the sermon is going to be at the monastery. I think some of you have brought along with you the copper leaves prepared to be deposited in the Dhatu Garbhe. So we'll most gracefully accept them from those who are unable to come to the monastery next week. But if you can, then you're all welcome, and we look forward to receiving you. All of the monks and the Anagarikas and Anagarikas have been informed of your visit, so they're all looking forward to receiving all of you next week. So that will be Sunday. Do try and get into the monastery for 6 a.m. We'll start the sermon just around 7. You'll be precepted, and then the sermon will go on till the alms giving in the afternoon. And before that, they'll have a Buddha Puja. And during that proceeding, you will get a chance to go and deposit your copper leaf in the Dhatu Garbhe yourself. So you can do it yourself. And once you are done with that, there'll be the alms offering for the monks. 137 of us now. Yesterday we had another ordination ceremony. 11 young men became superheroes. So our Anagarika Mahatmyas are now 90 in number. I'm looking for 10 more. Swaminathas are 137 in number. Anagarika Mahatmyas have lost count. You just can't keep on top of that because every day people walk in through those gates. Every day. So today when I head back to the monastery, there will be a new count. Every day, people walking through those gates. People who've seen the truth. People who want something better out of life for themselves and others. Right, let's do the merit transfer and bring the sermon to a close. First and foremost, then, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves how extremely fortunate we are to be in the presence of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude towards the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma, that has transferred all these merits. That has also transferred these merits to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. That has also passed on these merits to all the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. That has also transferred these merits to my teacher Guru Swami Mahanse, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to the friends of the monastery, our devotees, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcoming obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our elders, our acquaintances, our teachers, as well as everyone who's gone the extra mile on our behalf and have left no stone unturned to do good for us, who've supported us and assisted us and helped us in any way, shape or form. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcoming obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to fulfill and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer these merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have passed away in our name, our forefathers, our ancestors, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life and practice the path in peace and harmony. Let us also transfer these merits to all members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to those who lost their lives in the wars, be they friend or foe, as well as lost lives in natural disasters and calamities such as tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, as well as the pandemics. Reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters to us, friends and acquaintances to us. Let us take a moment out of gratitude and gratefulness to all of them. Transfer all the merits that we have all acquired collectively. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And may you and I, and everyone who's helped make this program a success, become a Rahatan Mahanse or an Arahat Theranin Mahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnan nidha tvetnva dvesha ginnin idatnva moha ginnin idatnva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva raga gini niveva dvesha gini niveva moha gini niveva nivansapa labeva nivansapa labeva nivansapa labeva tunruvange suvisi ananta maha guna belen silu loka silu sattvayoma nibbana param sukhen sukhita taravetva sadhu sadhu sadhu.